Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carlin, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases. Dr. Rebecca Carlin.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BVS Radio, its staff, or management, but represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information that I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you, after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced diseases, please go to the www.drcarley.com, drcarley.com, and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I went from being a surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. I do consults for people with autoimmune diseases and cancer to teach them how to reverse these problems with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and do everything based on history alone. You do not have to come to North Carolina to see me. Please call me at the number on my website if you would like to learn how I do consults. I ask you to consider the information I give using your own God-given common sense and discern the truth for yourself. I and my guests love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in. The number to call in toll-free in the United States is 877-270-8714. In Canada, it's 888-228-4494. There are other numbers you can use to call in also that are available on the bbsradio.com website. It is fine if you only use your first name and all shows are archived. Every week I will answer the question, what ails America, with a different response, as well as share the good news of what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet, for awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware, especially that inoculations are the true weapons of mass destruction, together we will be able to stop this holocaust on the health of people and pets. And let me remind you that if you do not stand up for the truth, you will fall for any lies. I am extremely happy to have as my guest tonight, once again for the third time, a veterinarian who is to pets what I am to people. Her name is Dr. Patricia Monahan Jordan. She is a DVM, CVA, CT, CVM. She went to a veterinary medical school at the North Carolina College of Veterinary Medicine, and she also attended South China University of Agriculture and Qi Institute of Redick, Florida. Her CV is massive. Some of the awards that she's received include the American Association of Women Veterinarian Scholarship, the Dean's List at UNCW and NCSU, the Alpha Zeta National Agricultural Honors Society, the NCSU Honors Program, Who's Who in American Colleges and Universities National Merit Scholarship Recipient, Outstanding Service Award of the UNCW, Escheat Scholarship, Winslow Scholarship, Staff NCO Competitive Academia Scholarship. She is a wonderful veterinarian and unfortunately recently left the clinic that she was working in because she could no longer go along with the program. And I just want to read something very quickly. A comic from Non Sequitur, which is in the paper every day. This was in my local Charlotte Observer on October 3rd, 2007. And this is what it says. We have a little girl who's decided that she's going to open up a think tank. And what she's going to do is refute the rumors about products being hazardous. And what she says is that years of research producing hard facts basically can be turned around by saying the exact opposite in a press release with some geek speak mixed in to make it sound sciency, and presto, the media gives it equal weight. And then her friend asked her, when does ethics ever come into the picture? And this young girl responds, who is starting this Danae's think tank, when the client's check doesn't clear. That's when ethics comes into the picture. Well, thankfully, we do have people like Dr. Patricia Jordan, who care more about ethics than money. And I have so many papers in front of me. She was sending me on a regular basis emails titled with things like Who We Killed Today. So I don't even know where to start off, but I want to welcome you to the show, Dr. Jordan. Thank you so much for coming back. If you want to listen to Dr. Jordan's archives, she's been on the show twice before in May. So go to the archives on bbsradio.com and listen to those shows if you have pets that you love and you want to learn what's actually happening. But thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Jordan.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be here.
Okay. So where should we begin? I have an email from you about what you wanted to talk about on the show tonight. So just, you know, start wherever you'd like. It's a very long email, so I'm not even sure. Where would you like to start?
Well, I just think that I'm going to pick up where Dr. Blake, the pet whisperer, who's an elder in our American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association, one of his comments that he made while he was being interviewed for, and you can watch this interview at www.drdumore.com. In the interview, Dr. Blake says he doesn't want to die before holistic medicine or the natural way of doing things you know, it's not 11th-hour medicine. And the other thing that he says in that interview is that there's not going to be a change for the benefit of the pets if we wait for it to come from within the profession. It's going to have to come from the consumer. So yes. All I can say is that let's proactivate all of our listeners and let them have some power in understanding. This is probably the biggest beef that I have that I'd like to get out today. The only vaccination that's regulated that you have to have is the rabies vaccine. So when you get these reminder cards from these veterinarians saying they need the lepto, the bordetella, the distemper, the parainfluenza, the parvovirus, yada, 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 there is no requirement for any of those vaccines. And actually, clients are very surprised to hear this because they put their trust in the vet. This is where I come in. I'm ashamed of my profession at this time for knowing that the information is out there that we don't have to vaccinate animals every year. It's debatable of whether you have to vaccinate them more than once to imprint their immune system. And I just want everyone to know that you do not have to have these shots, and it's not going to happen to stop them unless the owner stops them themselves.
Amen. And all I can say is that I'm totally against inoculations, period. But I understand what you're saying in terms of the law. And you had actually sent me a very large package with all kinds of very interesting information in it, including a document from the Muriel Company where they're talking about vaccinating. And the top of the document says, "You choose your vaccination protocol, not your vaccination manufacturer," which I was actually shocked to see. And they're actually stating in here that the American Animal Hospital Association and the American Association of Feline Practitioners have both advised veterinarians to use fewer vaccines and to vaccinate less frequently. This was a shock to me, but very good news. But, of course, I'm sure that not many veterinarians are following this information because they want the clients to come in every year and get vaccinated, get their pets vaccinated, because, of course, then it's another fee that they can charge. And it's really amazing. I mean, some of these emails that you sent me in regards to who's getting vaccinated, one of them I have here that you sent me on May 25th, Who We Killed Today, talks about a large mastiff who was had to be put to sleep for generalized lymphoma, drooling slime with blood and mucus. He lost a lot of weight and was only a skeletal frame. Only his lymph nodes stuck out. The dog had received a full complement of vaccines and killed rabies last year, and he didn't even make it one more year to live to the ripe young age of 4 years old. 4 years old. And you go on to talk about another dog, a 100-pound boxer mastiff, who was killed 20 days after receiving a full complement of vaccines, who had cancer and was vaccinated anyways. I mean, this is unbelievable with all the documentation that you've done showing how the cancers are forming at the site of vaccination, and yet this veterinary clinic that you worked with but have now since left because of your outrage at their practices, they would have no problem with vaccinating dogs with cancer. And how did they explain that to you?
They refuse to acknowledge it. And this is what's really irritating me, is that within the profession, there's no excuse anymore. And at the upcoming AHVMA conference, which is this coming weekend, on Tuesday, October 9th, Dr. Jean Dodds is going to be speaking all morning long, and the topic of her conversation for her talk is, are veterinarians just ignorant, or is it something else? And it's concerning the attitudes of them not changing over to the, I mean, there isn't anybody higher up than the American Veterinary Medical Association, and then the two interest groups, the American Feline Practitioners and also the American Animal Hospital Association. All of those have come back with recommendations to extend the vaccine protocols. I happen to agree with Dr. Ron Schultz, who has probably the most stripped-down protocol, and he only advises to do a distemper, parvo, and a adenovirus vaccine at 15 weeks of age for the puppy, and then check the titers 3 weeks later, and then never again for the life of those animals does he recommend them getting a vaccine, unless the titer showed that he did not receive a complement of antibodies to, you know, to use against the virus should it ever come forth. He is against using the leptobacteria vaccine, and his explanation, even though he lives in the lepto area, was very good. He said those lepto vaccines don't work. At the very best, you'll get 3 months of non-shedding for the dog. That doesn't mean that he won't get leptospira. He's still going to get it. That is a zoonotic disease. If the dog gets it in a subclinical sense, the way this vaccine will set them up for, they could give it to the client, and the client wouldn't even know, because it's not on the radar for most MDs to look at leptospira as a cause of kidney problems in people, and yet the dog can give it to the client. So in other words, when he goes through all these vaccines, Dr. Schultz, you know, he also is not a proponent of the Lyme's vaccine, even though he lives in a Lyme endemic area. He doesn't vaccinate his own dogs against it. And he considers what the majority of the veterinarians that I've seen doing, giving them what he calls the mumbo-jumbo vaccines that are mixed with bacterins and viruses together or to the animal when they're under sedation or they're under surgery. All of these are contraindications. And giving them every year, he said back in 1978, along with the other doctor that that authored on the paper, that there was never any scientific research to show that there was ever a need for the yearly vaccine, and that the only thing he saw it being used for was to generate that reminder to come in and have the dog examined.
And as my paper on my website, my response to the CDC states, as I quote from Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, the Bible by which medical doctors are trained in internal medicine, that the vaccinations do not prevent disease. They actually give you a chronic state of the disease. So, of course, by inoculating any animal or person with vaccinations, they're giving you the disease. So I have a hard time with even that schedule, but at least he's trying to wake the veterinarians up as to the fact that the over-vaccination is obviously overwhelming their immune system. And the pets are the canaries in the coal mine in terms of what's going on with the people. At least I take my hat off to your profession that they're starting to discuss this. I can't imagine a day where the pediatricians would have a conference where they would talk about the same issue. Only when hell freezes over will that occur, because they are causing all these diseases in people with the vaccinations as well. And I just want to advise the listeners to go to my website. Thanks to Dr. Jordan, she sent me some gold. This is such an important little thing that's been added to my website. It comes from the Compendium of Veterinary Products, the 10th edition, page 1351, where they're talking about the Defensor 3 vaccine made by Pfizer. This is the rabies vaccine. They purport that it's a killed virus. And under safety and efficacy, they actually state that tissue origin vaccines contain extraneous protein in addition to rabies antigen that can lead to autoimmune disease. I can't tell you how excited I was when you sent me that, Dr. Jordan, because, of course, that backs up everything that I'm saying, that people have to realize that it's not just the viruses that are in the vaccine that are the problem. It's also the tissues that the viruses are being cultured on that are being injected into you, your dogs, your cats, your ferrets, every breathing mammal on the face of the planet. And this is what's stimulating an autoimmune response that's leading to all autoimmune diseases. And, of course, once the immune system is overwhelmed with all these antigens, there's nothing left of the immune system. The T cells are shut down, and this is what leads to cancer. So I want to thank you for sending me that. I'm just curious if you've spoken to any of your peers about that little snippet that you found.
Oh, yes, I've showed it to them. And where I worked, the two veterinarians that I worked with, they just kept right on vaccinating. They do not care. There's nothing for me to say other than they're just friggin' mercenaries. I'm so upset about this because I know that's not the only clinic either. And one of the things that I think of is that it wasn't so much that we weren't told, because Dr. Schultz really was very clear about this. It's only been in the last 10 years that a lot of these immune studies have come out to help us see what was going on. And the immune studies are very dry to read. They're very mouse cell line oriented. And even for an immunologist, it can be very dry and difficult. But there's really no excuse, because we have the experts that have brought this to the table for not only discussions, but for going around and having group discussions as far as national discussions and the papers. I mean, Dr. Schultz has over 200 articles published in peer-reviewed journals. And then when I would show them that, they would say, well, we don't just listen to one person. I said, well, then let me show you the work from Dr. Macy. Dr. Dennis Macy is the oncologist at Colorado State University. He is also the backer of the Veterinary Vaccine Injury Compensation Act. He's trying to get compensation for those clients whose pets have come down with cancer as a result of the rabies vaccination, because the rabies is the only one, rabies is the only vaccine that is actually regulated. So, I mean, the rabies vaccine, and Dr. Schultz, I went and taped his seminar he had recently in this area, he said that's the worst one because it's a killed vaccine. Because they use a lot of adjuvant and mercury in that vaccine has aluminum hydroxide, which in 1999, the World Health Organization listed the veterinary vaccine adjuvants as carcinogenic. And it is not surprising to see these animals really do poorly after a rabies vaccine. And when they're getting the yearly mumbo jumbo, that's even worse. And I ask everybody who owns a pet, any time your pet has a problem, look back to the history. How many times I found cancer in these animals, and I had to look up, they weren't recording what vaccine they were using, they weren't recording where they used it. But I know since this past year, where we've really put an effort to try to document some of this, these cancers are coming up as a result of the inflammatory response to the vaccine, and rabies is one of the worst. Another one from Pfizer was really causing a lot of problems in the animals because it was the mumbo jumbo. It had mercury. It had adjuvant. It had four killed leptospirus, lots of protein with that. It had three modified live viruses. And Dr. Jean Dodds, who's going to be a speaker at the HVMA, she also owns Hemopet, which does the blood banking for all the animals. So she has plenty, plenty, plenty of specimens to look at the blood. And if you go onto her web pages, you will see where she's documented out all these gene problems that are existing now in the dogs and why Weimaraners have to be very worried about vaccinating them. I took all that information, a lot what you had given me, Dr. Carley, and then also what I've gotten from our major vaccine researchers, Dr. Richard Ford, Dr. Alice Wolf, her talks, Dr. Ron Schultz, and Dr. Jean Dodds. And then I went back and looked at that study that there was done at Purdue, Dr. Glickman, where he showed that the vaccinated, not the non-vaccinated, only the vaccinated animals were generating loads of autoantibodies. And you can just about find a reason for every single internal medicine case that we see in veterinary medicine, of course, with much increased frequency these days, since everyone's getting vaccinated, over-vaccinated, but they all traceable back to autoimmune disease or some kind of immune-mediated reaction to the vaccinations. If you know anything about immunology, it's incredible that anyone has let this get this far because your immune system is already set up to handle things that you would come in contact with. Whose idea was it that animals would have to be, or children, would have to be multiply vaccinated at very young ages and then carrying things like formaldehyde and mercury and aluminum hydroxide or aluminum phosphate? I mean, what happens is the medical community is ensuring job security by the administration of the vaccination at that level.
Yes, and that's who's determined that. But I want, and let me just say, it's really amazing. One of our listeners had heard you on a previous show talking about immune-mediated vasculitis of the nails of the pets that's associated with vaccinations. And her dog is now on my protocol to reverse that immune-mediated vasculitis. I mean, that really sent off a red flag to her. She has a black lab who actually is suffering from this very condition. This is what people have to realize. This is how they're creating the diseases. And I realize there's no way that they cannot know exactly what they're doing. They're in the business of disease creation. They are not involved in preventing disease. This has nothing to do with it. And this gets to the evil that's involved in this. And it's not just happening with the veterinarians. It's happening with the pediatricians, with the medical doctors at all levels. This is pure insanity. And I know that you are just as much of a warrior as myself to stop this insanity. But I wanted to just ask you, you just stated that rabies is the only vaccine that is regulated. Could you please explain that? That's kind of a shocker to me. What do you mean that it's the only vaccine that's regulated?
That's the only one that by law you have to have given to your pets.
Oh, okay. Okay,
yeah, that's what I meant by government regulated. For public health purposes, each state decides, you know, what their laws are going to be as far as how often they need it, but...
Okay. It's
really true ignorance on the veterinarian's part. I think that if you handed a multiple guess test, that 99% of the veterinarians out there would not be able to pass it on what it was that they were injecting into those animals. I consider the vaccine administration the most dangerous medical procedure that's done on a daily basis in the majority of the clinics across the United States without any full disclosure and certainly without informed consent. And this is just wrong.
Yes, it is. It's very evil. And, of course, as you wrote me in one of your emails, that the vaccines are not about health. They are about politics and business. Because what they're actually doing is making sure that they're going to have future business with that client because by creating a disease in the pet, they know the pet's going to come back and need to have, quote-unquote, treatment for their vaccine-induced disease.
The other problem I have to really put out there that I see now is that within the profession, we are not taught, and I understand this is the same for MDs, you're not really taught about contraindications or consequences. Pretty much there's a lot of teaching, mostly type A personalities, very focused individuals, to take this information and go with it, and they're really not taught to look outside the box. I would say that the majority of the profession does not acknowledge, because they do not recognize, what the adverse reactions from these vaccines are. They don't just occur in within a 72 hours. I know at the practice that I just came from that we would have probably 7 to 15 vaccine reactions a week that I knew of, being only one of 3 or 4 doctors that worked there, and that none of them were getting recorded on the record, none of them were getting followed up, none of them were getting called in anywhere. So if you take this as a typical small animal practice, and then you multiply that even by a 30%, you can easily see why this does not, it doesn't get recognized, it doesn't get acknowledged, it doesn't get called in. On the FDA veterinary site, they list that they, on the adverse reaction site, they are pleading, because when a vaccine is released, it's not safe. It's, they say it's safe because they're taking the work from the manufacturer. Nobody goes back to make sure that that work is actually accurate. And who is do you think it is going to be a manufacturer? It's not going to, I'm sorry, I just don't believe the ethics are out there. They have done no long-term studies to prove that any of these reactions are not coming because of the vaccine. And once they let them out into the general public, that's when they're looking to see what happens when it hits the, you know, the higher population number. And it says it, right? If you go to the FDA.gov and you go to the vaccine adverse event reporting page, it says it right there. I was also told, I guess that was Dr. Schultz also, the only thing that you need, and he's probably, like I said, the leading researcher on vaccines, the only thing they need to prove that a vaccine works is that it produces antibody. It doesn't even have to be antibody against the virus or bacteria it's trying to kill. And, you know, you can inject anything into the body and get an antibody response. So I was very upset to hear about that. But the fact that these don't get recognized, they don't get written down, I've seen vaccine reactions happen anywhere. Well, actually, there was a new doctor hired. She told me 11 years after the administration of the vaccine, cancer came up in the spot where it was vaccinated. So it doesn't even have to be like within a certain amount of time. However, I think as the animal gets older and they're insulted yearly, especially with the mumbo jumbo, and especially with practices that are not going out of their way to make sure they're not over vaccinated for the rabies, and then if they're also on a bad food or a poor food, or the foods like Old Roy that have some of the cancer causing agents in it, like BHA, BHT, that you are going to increase the frequency of how early you start to recognize these. I am so angry about the over-vaccination of the rabies. I now look at an animal and at that badge that they get as a result of a rabies vaccine, I consider that a badge to prove that they just had their genetics transmutated.
Well, that's another issue, and that's very important. What you're mentioning is that it's actually altering the very genetic structure. And, of course, yes, I'm convinced that with the animals, I mean, like I said, the animals are the canaries in the coal mine, because due to their short lifespans, they're showing us exactly what's happening to us as well. And, of course, as they're, you know, injecting all of these genetic materials into the animals and into the people, but it's showing up more in the animals, there's so many genetic things that are popping up in different breeds. And, of course, it's obvious that this is due to the inoculations. And, you know, I'm sure that you're one of the few vets that actually takes a vaccine history from your clients. It always amazes me when I teach people what I would do if I was they with their vaccine-induced diseases, especially in the case of seizures, because that's one of the few things that the CDC itself admits that's caused by vaccinations. There's a number of vaccinations that have been associated with seizures. And even in the case of seizures, when people go to the white coats, and their children especially have just had a seizure, They never asked the vaccine history. I was just involved in a case in Maine on September 14th. I was qualified as an expert witness in this case where the mother went to the white coat and complained about the child having a seizure after the vaccination, and she was questioning the pediatrician as to whether the seizure could have been caused by the vaccination. And rather than admit that that was a possibility, the pediatrician called the Child Protective Services and told them that the mother was mentally ill. And they took away the child on that basis. And that's why I went to court to testify, and we're still waiting for the outcome in that case. But it's truly amazing as to the fact that even the ones, even the reactions that are admitted by the Fatal Drugs Allowed group, the FDA, I love that term, that was a made by Betty Martini, who was a guest on my show a few weeks ago about aspartame. Even the admitted side effects of vaccinations, when a pet owner or a person goes to the white coat with that problem, they don't get a history of vaccination.
Right. I was just returning from a seminar I was at for Healing Oasis, and the title was... It was at National University of Health Sciences in Chicago, but one of the speakers there was board-certified chiropractic neurologist. He's a private practitioner. He's a professor at the Carrick Institute for Graduate Studies. And I personally asked him, because this whole seminar, well, they had a very good nutritional part, but it was about functional neuroanatomy and seizures and how we could treat it. And this particular practitioner, and I'm not going to mention his name because I don't think this is very complimentary, but they did go over the seizures, and I raised my hand, and I had to ask him, because as practicing with people, where did the vaccines fit in that? And, you know, he admitted to me that they do not ask adults about their vaccine history, that it's only something that's possibly starting to be asked now of the children. And I said, well, you know, we get a lot of dogs that start vaccinating after their rabies vaccine. And then you'll see the practitioners put them on phenobarbital, but you'll still see them not take any attention to not be over-vaccinating them with the rabies, because, as I said, that's the only one that is actually regulated. So, you know, you have animals around here who, when I ask them, when did the seizure start? I would say 80% of them started after a vaccine administration.
Exactly.
And I mean, what are they doing? They're doing it every year.
In my experience, the only way a seizure can be caused is by head trauma or vaccines. That's
right.
It. I mean, what else can cause a seizure? And it's very unlikely that there's ever been any head trauma in the people that have seizures, so the vaccines are the likely culprit. And like you said, they never ask that history. It's unbelievable. And to just put them on an anti-seizure medication and continue to give the thing that caused the seizure, it's beyond insane. It's. I know exactly how you feel, because I feel the same way. You're watching this happen, and it's like, how can they continue to do this?
They'll tell them to give Benadryl first when they've had reactions, even though
right.
They won't be down in the record and they won't be, you know, recognized. I saw some very bizarre things that just recently I've started to pick up my awareness of things that could happen. And we had an eight-week-old kitten that was vaccinated with a modified live distemper virus that developed an immune-mediated reaction in its eye. And her sibling brother did not. But, again, you know, I called it into the company, and I explained what happened, and it was never there before the vaccine, and it was after the vaccine that it happened, and it definitely looks immune-mediated. And their whole thing was, well, I don't think it's due to the vaccine. And if you put the fox in charge of the hen house, I'm sorry, I just don't have any faith, once again, any more than I do that the manufacturer is going to have the ethics to test those products properly. That, you know, that they're going to record on their own, you know, their own product. We really, it just doesn't make any sense to me why you should even have to have your animal vaccinated once it's been imprinted properly at the younger age. It just doesn't, you know, the titer tests are going to be out. I know Dr. Schultz said next year, I think in the spring of 2008, there'll be an in-house titer test for distemper and parvo that'll be user-friendly and easily available. And you just should, you know, if your veterinarian is really adamant about the vaccine, say, you know what, I'm not going to pay you to do that, but I will pay you to have the titer checked. If that titer is adequate, and our experience for doctors doing holistic work that 15 and 20 years, there's so few non-responders or the titers aren't holding that it is prudent to check, but don't let them, you know, vaccinate again unless there is actually documentable reason, you know, to do that. And then I personally don't let them do my pets either. I mean, I hate it that to fly across this country or to board your animal, that the boarding facilities have even less, you know, understanding of the science behind vaccines than the professionals who are administering them. And all of these places are requiring these animals to have something that is not good for them. I have friends that have boarding kennels that say the only time they have sick dogs in there is after they've been vaccinated. And I have examples from pet store puppies that come in. They're fine until they are vaccinated, and then they're sick, and then they get another vaccine, and you'll really see the ones with the weaker genetics because they'll have a problem all the way down the road with everything that they get vaccinated to. And then if they, for God's sake, have surgery or anesthesia at the same time they're administered a rabies vaccine, then for sure they're not going to do well. If they do well the first year or the second year, but usually this is something that's coming on pretty fast in the animals because their lifespan isn't as long as ours. In 10-year-old dog, you can see 10 generations of really bad genetic corruption go on if you're having that dog, the mumbo jumbo. Now, not every single one, but I would say the majority of them. So it's just not necessary. And the only way they're going to stop this is to have the consumer just put their foot down and say, you know what, show me why they do have to have it. And tell me, what is it that you're injecting into my dog? You're bypassing his cell-mediated immunity. What is it that you're giving him? What exactly is in that vaccine? And that you'll learn to ask those questions, when you answer those questions, that they don't need to have them.
Yes, and that's what I encourage everyone to do, because just like you said, it's going to be the consumers that are going to stop this insanity with the pets and the people. And what you said is so important, but I want you to know that your work is really making a difference. I actually have a client in Florida who breeds Maine Coon cats, and I sent her copies of the CDs of our previous radio shows, and she gives them to everybody that buys a cat from her. She no longer gets the kittens vaccinated. They do not have a health certificate when the people buy them. Instead of a health certificate, they're getting a copy of our CDs. So that's one example that I know of where it's making a difference. And that's what people have to start doing, to realize that the health certificate is actually a death certificate, that they're giving you proof that they've just given your kitten or your puppy or whatever the genetic manipulation, the initial assault that's going to cause them to have a problem down the line. And what you said before is so important, because be it person or pet, these vaccine manufacturers, that's what they always do. They've, you know, manufactured these time limits, which are totally arbitrary. They say, unless you have a reaction within such and such a time, it's not due to the vaccine. Certainly, everybody could realize that it's the strength of your immune system that determines how long it's going to take you to have a problem. So if your immune system is a little stronger, then it's not going to be able to be degenerated as fast as if the immune system is not strong. So all of this time limitation stuff is garbage. And that is what people have to understand, is that the vaccines can affect you, you know, an indeterminate amount of time. There's no telling. It's an individual process. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. And it's really tied into a couple of other things. You know, how much damage is the body receiving from, say, environmental toxins and poisons? You know, you live in that part of New Jersey which has a lot of industrial poisons or farming poisons, or are you getting a bad diet? I mean, I'll tell you what I really liked and enjoyed at the last seminar I went to. They showed us a film of the Pottinger studies where he showed a couple generations out of the cats fed raw foods. The more processed the foods were, the more sugary the foods were. In just one generation, they started showing up huge difference in their skeletons. There was a lack of calcification. There was so much, not only, you know, genetic damage, but they also weren't thriving. Their vitality wasn't good, and their fertility wasn't good. And that they determined that it would take four generations of raw food feeding to fix the problems that, you know, occurred by feeding them processed foods. I see, yeah, there, it's, we call it, you know, it's, well, it's, most of the foods that come in the over-the-counter, most of it is really landfill. If you go to the Whole Truth About Pet Foods, that website, or if you read Foods Pets Die For by Ann Martin, you know, there's plenty of information out there. If you just go to the FDA website on the recalls for foods, you'll just be amazed. It's everybody is out there except for within the last 16 years, I've seen some pet food makers like the Natura Company. I haven't ever seen some of those foods become a victim of finding pentobarb residues in the foods and things like that. But, I mean, foods, especially after this conference I went to, I realized that's your whole, that's what, you know, veterinarians were not taught about business, about how to run a business, and yet so many of them are. They weren't taught about vaccinology, nothing about that. And that's the, probably, like I said, the major medical procedure they're doing on a daily basis that's causing the most harm. And they also weren't taught anything about nutrition. I mean, my own, well, you know, it, they're just now starting to get decent programs starting to be introduced. So, I mean, when you go, where are you going? You're entrusting this professional for the care for your animal, and they are the least likely to be able to produce for you or to offer you a really good, sound nutritional program for your pet and not making them diseased by over-vaccinating them. The other thing that was on the Dr. Dumore video that came up was that they didn't see these problems with cancer and autoimmune disease in the frequency that they are now, back when dogs were fed pretty much from the table. And I have a lot of clients that have been brainwashed by veterinarians to think that the what they need to do is feed them something, you know, crap in a bag. And that's just not so. And it's just sad because, like I said, the things that, if you understand the mindset, what goes into an exam is not a cattle call practice where you throw them up on the table, bam, 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 hit them up with, you know, $124 worth of shots, and then hurt, and then turn around and hand the animal back to the owner. I mean, that is so far from that. What we're doing is we're creating more disease, and that's what they're really trained to recognize and deal with is disease. They don't teach you what is health.
Exactly, and that's the same thing you're saying is true for the white coats in the medical profession as well. And I want to just underline what you said because it's so important. The nutrition is key. I mean, I feed my pets a brand of organic pet food. I have two cats and one dog from the Timberwolf Company. The changes that I've seen in my pet's coat, and that's just an outward manifestation, but it's unbelievable. I have a gray Angora cat who was shedding everywhere. I would have fur balls, you know, just going through my house. You know, it looked like tumbleweeds. And since I started feeding him this organic dog cat food, I've seen an amazing difference in his coat. And that's, like I said, an outward manifestation of the health within. But it's not just even the nutrition and the vaccines. It's all the other things that they're doing to pets and to people as well, including giving them all these toxic poisons for fleas and ticks. I'll never forget, I went to somebody who purported to be a alternative veterinarian. I drove a whole hour, took my dog to this veterinarian. I'm trying to find a veterinarian that will spay my dog, even though she's never been vaccinated. And this veterinarian, the reason she calls herself alternative is because she took one acupuncture course. But, of course, she recommended all the traditional poisons and refused to spay my dog without a rabies vaccine. But when I was in the waiting area, I heard one of her employees who would come in to pick up some of this flea and tick stuff. I forget the name of the particular product. But the employee actually told this man, you know, how to apply the flea and tick preparation to the dog and actually told him, try not to let the dog lick it. But if he does lick it and he starts frothing at the mouth, don't worry about it. It's okay. And I'm like, oh, my God. Frothing at the mouth, I mean, that's a, you know, obvious sign that he's been poisoned. So it's all of these things that they're doing. The heart guard. I had someone call in to my show when I was on another network a couple of years ago. This was a dog that actually was involved in 9/11 going to find the survivors. This dog was almost dead as a result of all kinds of vaccines the dog had received on top of the heart guard medication and the flea and tick preparations. The dog is doing extremely well today after going through a detox. But this is what people have to realize. It's all of these things that they're doing. And actually, I have in front of me one of your emails where you talked about this euthanasia stuff, which is really pretty amazing how there's a warning on the bottle that it's toxic to wildlife. And they say that that they're advised to incinerate the animals that the euthanasia is used on or bury them down 6 feet deep. And as you just stated, instead of doing this, they're actually putting it into pet food because, as you talked about on a previous show, they have these protein collection units, which is an amazing name for these individuals that are going around and, you know, basically collecting the Soylent Green, the dead animals that they're then using to make into pet food.
Right. They say Old Roy has Old Roy in it. Yes, that is actually, there's investigative reporters. I mean, I don't take that and say that lightly, but people have to realize that as, I don't know, $11 billion industry, that there is nobody in control of the pet food industry. They can say whatever they want, and there's no one there checking up behind them either. But the FDA runs a site for, I think it was in 1998, I believe, I saw my first copy of the, they went out and all around the Beltsville, Maryland area collected food samples, and all of them, essentially all of them, had pentobarb residues, and they were using pentobarbital to euthanize the animals. And one of the reasons why they started, I just found this out recently, the reason they started looking was because animals started getting resistant to that medication that we were using to offset seizures or to actually euthanize the animal. And they couldn't figure out why. And the reason why is because these dead dogs were ending up, these dead animals in roadkill and less desirable, what we call the dead, disease, dying, and disabled group. That's the protein source that ends up in most of these dog foods. The other thing is a lot of them have, they found rabies tags, the plastic bags. They found styrofoam and plastic from the rotted meat that was put in there. I mean, you know, if you just, there's no way to boil off all of that poisons and the chemicals that are in those products to end up with anything that comes out in the bag, no matter how pretty the label is, and no matter who calls it, you know, scientifically tested or whatever, you know, for your pet. I mean, if you just think about it, I mean, there's a great book out there called Give Your Dog a Bone by Dr. Ian Billinghurst. He's from Australia. He's a veterinary surgeon. I've heard him speak, and that's a very good book to read. He had pets that when he was going through veterinary school, he couldn't afford to buy the expensive diets, and they didn't get a whole lot of medical care. They got home care, and they were also fed from the table, and they were pretty darn healthy. After he graduated and he got his high-paying job in a veterinary position where he started feeding them the little diet that's recommended in all the veterinary hospitals, and then they started getting vaccines. And this is the part he doesn't mention, you know, and this is the part I would pick a bone with him, is he forgot to mention the other thing that's very significant on generating poor health, and it was a combination of that commercial pet food feeding and the vaccinations. But he was just saying about how unhealthy his dogs were. So if anybody wants to get some more information on, like, you know, how to feed dogs properly, Ian Billinghurst's Give Your Dog a Bone is a good place to start. The other thing, the Pottinger studies, I had a cat practice the last 8 years where I had done only cats. I had quit vaccinating 9 years ago when I found out that it wasn't necessary and they didn't need it. you know, everyone wonders why does the cats get more and more hostile every time they're brought into the veterinary clinic. It's no joke. They know exactly what's going on. They don't feel good after the vaccines. But anyway, cats are particularly, it's crucial that you feed them properly. And there isn't anything more stupid than crackers in a bag for a cat. Cats are true carnivores. They have got to have meat. Their bodies can't even use the omega-3 fatty acids or B vitamins if they're coming from plant material. The only corn that they would have had in their diet would have been whatever was, you know, on the glutamus maximus of the mouse they ran down. So when you look at these foods by Purina, Iams, by anybody, even by Science Diet, when you see corn gluten and meal in there, and corn, and wheat, and sorghum, wheat gluten and meal, these are things that are highly allergenic. This is what produces the diabetes in our cats. This is not even anything that they can use, but it is cheap. And then, you know, they say that they market this to the consumer as this is what you should feed your cat. All of the problems with shedding, all the problems with overweight, all the problems with diabetes, all of the problems with not being able to poop, constipation, all of that is related to diet. And it's because the veterinarian does not step in there when they're doing that annual exam and ask them, what are you feeding your animal, and be concerned about it. I actually got yelled at my job for spending too much time with those concerns, and they told me the people didn't care what they fed, and I was astounded. This was 3 weeks before that pet food recall that we just, you know, not so recently had a problem with. But also with cats, they came from a desert animal, and I just saw a paper that all cats are linked genetically to this, predator cat from the Sahara Desert. Desert animals do not get their water in puddles. They get it out of their food. So this makes perfect sense to me, especially when they're shedding. They're changing coats in the spring and the fall. That if they only have dry food, and then you have all of this hair that never digests, you can give them all the enzymes in the world, it's still not going to digest. It's meant to, you know, they're not on a natural diet that was never meant to plug up the system the way they do. And, you know, that's why I said, you know, Dr. Pitcairn, who I'm in his advanced class right now for veterinary homeopathy, I don't know why he doesn't have laryngitis, because he just has been on his soapbox for the past 35 years with these topics. He told me, like 8 years ago when I first met him, the two leading causes of ill health in companion animals today is the feeding of commercial pet foods and the overuse of vaccines. And then I would also put in there the administration of pharmaceuticals. Yes. Just recently, I heard some information both in the AVMA journal, where they listed that acupuncture was more effective than anything else they had for treatment of intervertebral disc disease, and then on ABC News they were listing about how acupuncture was the most effective for lower back pain. And then in our discussion group, it came up that a leading pharmaceutical CEO had said, at best, pharmaceuticals, are at best 35% effective because of people's genetics are different, da-da-da-da. Somebody brought up the fact, well, isn't that the same as placebo? And so, you know, you have to question, you know, how much of this stuff that's unnatural belongs being administered into or to the body. You know, I think people have, I'm not saying that there's never a reason to give a certain medicine, and there are some medicines, I know doxycycline was one of them, that can actually cause a genetic change against, some type of a stomach cancer or something. And knowing about which, you know, specifically would come in and work genetically to do something is very important. We know now that aluminum hydroxide, which is the adjuvant in vaccines, Dr. Ford is carrying this all around. We know he has a nice slideshow that shows the P53 suppressor gene, which usually keeps cancer down in our bodies from marching around, is suppressed and not able to be expressed, and therefore you do get an expression of cancer. So if you see these animals that have vaccines, not one, not two, not three, not four, sometimes six vaccines every single year, and then in combination with a bad diet, yeah, you're going to see expressions phenotypically of disease pretty quick. And it's just, to me, it's just very clear now that we're just so off base on what we should be doing. There's a lot of holistic doctors who say they're holistic, like you said, because they've done one modality. And, you know, and that's sad because really I don't see how you could be carrying any vaccinations through as mandatory. And you should, if you're a really good doctor, you should be fighting like hell against that rabies vaccine. I mean, they had some catching up to do to understand. I mean, they have a 7-year study and a 10-year study now underway, funded, I mind you, not by pharmaceutical companies, funded not, I mind you, by the veterinary profession itself, although I'm sure there's some veterinarians that have given to this, but funded by the people whose animals have been harmed by those vaccines in the first place. Just like some of the best websites that are out there, Catherine O'Driscoll's Canine Health Concerns from the UK, one of the best websites out there for showing you. And she also wrote a book. I just got her second book. She wrote one called What Vets Won't Tell You About Vaccines, and I just got her second one. It's a shock to the system. And she's just as hopeless as I am about trying to understand why more people aren't understanding this, that they shouldn't have these, that these reactions come after these vaccines. I'm sorry, you just cannot trust your doctor to tell you the truth.
That's totally correct. And unfortunately, the problem is that people trust the veterinarians as well as the medical white coats. You know, they put that white coat on, they got all that training, and they believe that they're going to have their pet's or their child's best interest at hand. And, of course, that's not true. And, of course, the reason the veterinarians aren't getting on the soapbox the way that you are is because they're afraid of what it's going to do to their bottom line financially. You know, if they don't have the pets coming in every year to get that health exam, which, of course, is always accompanied by multiple shots, then how are they going to, you know, make a living? That's the bottom line, unfortunately, with people and with pets.
Yeah, there is another website, Next to Kin, and the fellow who put that website out there was very adversarial. I couldn't even get him to have a discussion with me about how bad associates, the positions they were in when they couldn't make the change, they were going to have to, you know, go flip burgers at McDonald's or something because they couldn't get the practice owners to do this, and he has no compassion for that. He's lost a pet, as many of these websites. If you go to catshots.com, that fella, let's see, Jeff and Colleen Kramer lost their kitty to fibrosarcoma from a rabies vaccine. They're working. They have a wonderful website up. I couldn't believe the information that these lay people have gotten together. And the one thing they all have in common, unfortunately, is that they've all lost pets. The www.catshots.com will also get you bumper stickers that say "Educate before you vaccinate" and posters and things, but you know, it's out there. I was trying to get the group up in the northeast part of the United States that had posters. They're actually poster children of their pets that have died because of an adverse reaction to vaccines. And as sad as it is, you know, it's just like I can't move my profession to do anything. That's why I've washed my hands of them. There's nothing. I can't move that mountain. It has got to move from the pet owners. The compassion, you know, it's out there. There are a lot of veterinarians that are working very hard. And if you just, you know, like the www.drdumore site, you know, you can see plenty of veterinarians, and they have over 800 hours put together from interviews of people that understood that something wasn't going right with the vaccinations, got away from that, also saw the connection with the feeding, and are trying to find a more sustainable, more viable type of pet care. They go through the problems that they weren't, you know, told what health is and that they're geared towards producing a disease state, not making the animal well or curing disease. I'm telling you that the three most important things that we should have gotten, we didn't in veterinary school, which was about you know, nutrition and about vaccinology, and now vaccinology is different from immunology, and then also even about how to run a business, because any veterinarian who has reduced his practice to the value being on what he can inject into that animal is a poor representation of the profession, and that has to become public knowledge. They have got to they have got to look their vets in the eye and say, I'm not coming here anymore if you can't, you know, if you can't do the right thing.
Exactly. That's so important what you're saying. And once again, I'll just say that people have to do the same thing with their pediatricians. I just had a client call me today who was telling me how somebody, a physician's assistant at their pediatrician's office, actually told them that they don't vaccinate their own child, but the policy of the office is that if you do not inoculate your children, they will not, you know, take care of your children. In other words, they fired this mother because she knew her child was vaccine damaged, even though the physician's assistant herself said she doesn't vaccinate her own children. This has to be a grassroots effort, and I just want to say, because we're out of time, you had sent me an email back in May where it has something that was said at a Crosby, Stills, and Nash concert, where David Crosby sang, speak, speak, out against the madness. We have to speak out when our loved ones are being harmed. If we don't, then it seems to me that we are just part of the problem. And what Dr. Right. Jordan said is so true. You cannot count on your veterinarians to do the right thing or your white coats. It's going to be the people that is going to stop this insanity of inoculations. And not just the inoculations, I just want to highlight, it's the big picture. If you go on my website, you will see the big picture. It's all of the crazy things that we're doing to ourselves and our pets that we're being told by the Fatal Drugs Allowed organization and the EPA and all these other alphabet agencies that all these things are safe. It's a lie. We have to educate ourselves. We have to learn how to be healthy. And unfortunately, that involves doing things that are not involved with all of these organizations. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Jordan, for your work. I'm so proud of you for what you're doing for the pets. And I will just state that even though I know you're frustrated, at least there are veterinarians like yourself in the field that are doing the right thing. In the medical community, there's many less people that are doing what they have to do to stop this insanity. So thank you so much. Keep up the good work. And what can I say? God bless you. I'm sending you a big hug. And I thank you for being a guest on the show again, and keep your information coming.
All right.
Okay. Good night.
For the animals.